$1 pledge, we can read their name on air, or maybe Edith Ann might be able to even say hello. I don't know.
And then you can have it as a ringtone. I'm going to have mine as a ringtone. 1-800-735.
How come my voice has never been recorded for the archives?
Oh, Ernestine, welcome.
Well, honey, you should show up.
You know, it means so much to me that we have the guests in studio, not just Lily Tomlin, of course, but, you know, Jolene Beiser and Christine Blasdale, and this project on the American women making history and culture. I've been in the archives since 1998, and this is the culmination of all those years of my career trying to chase digitization and chase technology to try to preserve voices that mean so much and move people so much. And the women's recordings, the feminist recordings, taught me so much how to be a man, and as well as respecting my sisters, my mother, my nieces. So it means so much to me that you, the listeners, get the education that I've been offered and have the opportunities to listen to these. And it's just such a pleasure and a privilege to be here on Pacifica Radio. Dial 1-800-735-0230 and join the game that I've been in for so many years, which is educating myself. And these recordings are not in the schools and the universities. I didn't get this information. So I beg you and urge you to please join us at 1-800-735-0230.
That's right. And you will get these gifts before December 24th. So this makes a wonderful gift, a holiday gift, or you could be like James, which was wonderful. James is giving it to two universities, not even keeping a copy for himself, but donating these to two universities, which I think is a brilliant thing to do, because then so many young minds are going to be exposed to not only these amazing women, but the voices of Martin Luther King Jr., of Malcolm X, my brain is exploding with all of the people that are in these archives, but it is just phenomenal. At that $1,000 level, there are over 800 hours. If you pledge at the $300 level, there's 342 hours, and you get two gifts. So again, please call right now. We only have a few minutes to go. The number is 1-800-735-0230. I know we are getting so close to that $5,000 match. Do we have an announcement?
Yes, yes, yay, $500. Celeste Thomas, the Woodland, Texas. In Texas, $500. That's like 500 smackaroos from a Texas buckaroo.
Yes! Thank you so very much.
And we hope that you'll take your second copy and donate it to
Texas
legislature.
Thank you, Celeste. That was wonderful.
Legislature.
Yes. And I'm not forgetting you either, James. And Valerie, too. Wonderful donors. Thank you.
And thanks for everybody. We've got about a minute and a half left to go. And
that means there's 90 seconds for you to call. That means there's 90 seconds. If someone out there wants to pledge at the $1,000 level, remember, it's good as being doubled, and you're going to get the extra added bonus of the Edith Ann doll, and your heart is going to explode with love for this wonderful archives. And we have Lily Tomlin here. We want to make sure that she gets to say goodbye to everybody, but we need those phone lines really going crazy right now. 1-800-735-0230. This is one of the last opportunities to get a tax deduction, so what a wonderful way to do it. 1-800-735-0230. You know the work that Brian has done and the entire staff upstairs. Lily, what do you want to say to the listeners right before, because we're getting ready we got a break soon, right? What would you like to say?
Well, I mean, I've been lucky enough to go walk through the archives, and this has been an absolute labor of total intention and love on Brian and his whole staff. You cannot even imagine what it's like when you discover some of the stuff that's available or that they've preserved. And this kind of history is nowhere else. And all of it would have been lost if there hadn't been this real commitment and passion for preserving it and seeking it out. And I think I just think it's a joy.
Well, thank you, Lily. We have to wrap up, and I want to thank you so much for coming down and being with me and joining me over the years with the Pacifica Radio Archives.
I'm honored.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
You are listening to the Pacifica Radio Archives annual holiday fun drive broadcast, preserving a living history on all five Pacifica radio stations. 99.5 FM WBAI New York, 89.3 FM WPFW Washington DC, 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 94.1 FM and 89.3 FM KPFA KPFB Berkeley, 88.1 FM KFCF Fresno, 90.7 FM KPFK Los Angeles, also heard on 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 99.5 FM China Lake, 93.7 FM North San Diego.
Hello, yes, this is Brother Cornell West, and I am here to do all that I can to support my dear brothers and sisters at Pacifica. Students, faculty, teachers need to get in on this magnificent project and program. I'm doing all that I can. I'm behind it 120%. It is what we need in these times.
Call 1-800-735-0230. Our volunteers can help you select your gift. You'll receive two copies of your gift, one for you and one for a school or friend. And you'll get them no later than December 24th. Support us with a $150 pledge and receive Season 8 of From the Vault, 42 hours featuring Nelson Mandela, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Andy Warhol, legendary activist Ella Baker, Irish poet Seamus Heaney, and more. You can pledge at the $300 level and receive the entire From the Vault series, 342 hours marking 8 years of the weekly public radio series. Call 1-800-735-0230 or visit PacificaRadioArchives.org. Stay tuned.
You're tuned to Pacifica's 12th annual two-day Pacifica Radio Archives Holiday Fun Drive National Simulcast, preserving a living history. Your donations today are critical. They support and match grant-funded projects. This year from the Grammy Foundation and the National Historical Publications and Records Commission at the National Archives. You can help make it happen by calling 1-800-735-0230 or visit online at PacificaRadioArchives.org. Stay tuned for the next hour in this Pacifica Network special national broadcast.
Welcome to this special Pacifica Radio Archives National Broadcast. I'm John Wiener, live in L.A. This is radio for the 99%. Later in this hour, we'll speak with Elliot Mintz, the legendary late-night host in L.A. on KPFK in the 60s and 70s. Today, he returns to our airwaves to talk about the heroic days of alternative radio. Elliot Mintz was also a best friend of John Lennon and Yoko Ono, especially during Lennon's Lost Weekend here in L.A. in 1973. We'll also be talking about that. This hour is part of the national broadcast of the Pacifica Archives annual holiday fundraiser. The Pacifica Archives are our history. You're not going to get it anywhere else, and that's why we're asking you to please call and pledge during this hour, 800-735-0230. Later in this hour, we'll be talking about some of our magnificent premiums from the Pacifica Radio Archives. Well, first up, today's political report. For that, we turn to John Nichols. He's Washington correspondent for The Nation. He blogs at thenation.com. His new book is Dollarocracy. We reached him tonight in Madison. John Nichols, welcome.
Welcome to you, my friend. It's good to be talking to you.
Well, let's start with Obamacare. Last time you were on our show here in L.A., it was the first day of signing up, and it looked like millions of people were trying. Today, of course, there's a lot of well-known problems. But it turns out in California, the state-run exchange and website are doing pretty well. Covered California, it's called. It's signed up more people than the federal website, which handles all 36 states that are participating. And since California is the biggest state, this makes me somewhat optimistic that there is light at the end of the tunnel for those, what is it, 40 million Americans who don't have health insurance. Where do you think we stand at this point?
Well, I think we stand in a complex place. Practically, the extension of health insurance to not all 40 million, unfortunately, because Obamacare doesn't really do that, but to a substantial portion of that 40 to 45 million that are uninsured and roughly another 40 to 45 million that are seriously underinsured, you'll get a lot of them, and you should be able to get a lot of them. The problem we've got at this point is that we didn't create a national health care plan. What we created was a cobbled-together mixture of regulation, private insurance, and state-based interventions. And putting all that together is very, very complex. It doesn't, it's not the easy way to do it. If you simply created a national health care plan and said, it's one plan, no matter where you live, everybody's in, nobody out, here's your number, go for it, you're done, right? That would have done it. Unfortunately, they ran it through the states. When you run it through the states, we have, because of the system that we have in the U.S., some states that are all in, thrilled to have it, thrilled to do it. You talk about California, that's one place where, because of Medi-Cal for a long time, there's always been an interest in extending this. And the federal plan actually makes a lot of what's been going on easier. Another state is Kentucky. So it's not just some big, you know, West Coast liberal state. You've got a state out in the, you know, the Mid-South, Kentucky, that decided to go all in. They've had high level of sign-up. On the other hand, you have many states tending to be controlled by Republican governors, Republican legislatures, that have chosen not to go in. They've made it dramatically more complicated. They don't have the state-based infrastructure in that. And remember those three legs I suggested? You know, federal regulation, private insurance, state-based interventions. They, many states don't have those state-based interventions. That's made things a lot more complicated. And until we sort that out, it's going to remain complicated. And this notion that it's not a universal plan, that some places are opting in, some are opting out, some are trying hard to make it work, others are not trying to make it work, that's going to delay a full implementation for a substantial amount of time. At the end of the day, though, I think, my gut is, that in a year from now, this won't be a very big debate. Basically it'll be functioning, and we'll have had a lot of screaming and yelling, a lot of complaints along the way. But a historical example is very useful in this regard. I have a friend, Gene Farley, who passed away recently. He was in his mid-80s, but he had actually helped to develop healthcare plans in other countries. He was one of the great pioneers of family medicine in the United States. And, you know, he's down in Jamaica and helped them develop theirs. He was very familiar with the Canadian plan. One of the things that Gene said to me, he passed away only recently, said to me before he passed on, he says, you know, this is always hard. It never comes easy anywhere. And he reminded me that in Canada, in the early stages of trying to develop their single-payer plan, in some provinces like Saskatchewan, they had province-wide doctors' strikes.
Wow.
Doctors actually went on strike.
Wow.
Because they didn't want to go into the plan, right? And so you understand that's a lot more serious than what we're dealing with. In some other country, in Britain, there was a lot of complexity and a lot of struggle, a lot of resistance. But at the end of the day, if you take a deep breath and let things kind of move forward, let it move through all the sturm and drang, all of the resistance, generally there's not really much example of it not working. You end up with an element of universality. And once that happens, John, that's where the next stage of this debate begins, because it is ridiculously inefficient to run this through all the private insurance companies. And at that point, and I think this is why so many Republicans and so many conservatives have been very resistant to this. At that point, once you've got the universality, it becomes very, very clear that the most efficient way to do this is to pool things at a high level and allow masses of people to bargain with healthcare delivery companies or you know, not-for-profits, as well as with the pharmaceutical industry. And once you get there, pretty quickly you move toward a single-payer plan. And I think, you know, look, 10 years from now, do I think the United States is going to have something along the lines of single-payer? Yes, I do. But it's going to be a long, hard fight, and that will probably be implemented by President Hillary Clinton, not by President Barack Obama.
John Nichols, you reported recently for The Nation on the socialist who got elected to the city council in Seattle. Seems like some things are possible at the state or the local level that you can't do in Congress or the White House. Let's talk about Seattle.
Well, this is a really fascinating thing. What's going on in Seattle is a lot bigger than just one person elected to the city council. Seattle has, for a variety of reasons, become kind of a hotbed of discourse about inequality. And I think it's partially because Seattle has some people who are riding incredibly high. And this is where Microsoft is, or in the Seattle suburbs. And so you have some people who have immense amounts of money, literally billions and billions of dollars. And then you got other folks who are living in poverty and really struggling to get by. And that inequality debate in Seattle has become more sophisticated than in some other parts of the country. It's not that inequality is more serious there. It's just that it's developed at a level that is very interesting. Seattle on November 5th had a series of elections that were of consequence. In one, in the Seattle suburbs, SeaTac, which is the suburb where the airport is located, they had on the ballot a proposal to create a $15 minimum wage. It appears to have won. And so people have actually voted themselves an almost doubling of the federal minimum wage. In the city of Seattle, that wasn't on the ballot, but a candidate ran for city council, Shama Sawant. She's a economics professor at a community college, an Occupy activist, and an open and proud socialist. And she said, you know, look, elect me to city council. I will fight for a $15 minimum wage, for a tax on millionaires, and for absolute protection of public services in an anti-austerity model. And Shama Sawant was not given a lot of chance of winning. She wasn't treated particularly seriously during the course of the campaign, but she built a remarkable grassroots campaign, put high energy into it, kept banging on that $15 minimum wage, and two things became clear. Number one, people were ready for that $15 minimum wage discussion. It's something that everybody across the country should take in. Instead of nickel and diming this at a $9, $10 minimum wage, take the great leap forward. Look at the fact that Australia has roughly a $16 minimum wage, and understand that a developed country shouldn't have people working in poverty, working full time and ending up in poverty. That came through strong in Seattle. It was a very successful initiative. And the other thing that we learned from the Seattle circumstance is that identifying as a socialist is no longer so damaging or dangerous a circumstance politically as I think a lot of people thought. This is something that I think a lot of our media and our political class has to catch up with, because the overlay of the Cold War, the overlay of the aftermath of the Cold War, and frankly, a lot of the messaging from right-wing Republicans at this point would have people believe that the mention of the word socialist is some sort of nuclear bomb. It just blows up the discussion. Those people who think that aren't looking at the polling data. Polling data shows that people under 30 actually marginally have a more favorable view of socialism than capitalism.
Yes, that is true.
And people in many communities of color have significantly higher levels of approval of socialism than the overall population for a variety of reasons. And so we end up with the fact that this word is not so negatively viewed universally as I think Sarah Palin might want you to believe. The Seattle result tells us something about that. It doesn't tell us that, you know, this country is going to instantaneously accept socialism at every level. It also doesn't tell us that people necessarily understand what the S word means. You know, people have different definitions, different ideas, but a lot of the old negative overlays are no longer there. And there's one other place that's significant on this. Remember that in New York City, the New York Times put on the front page that Bill de Blasio had, as a young man, talked about democratic socialism. His opponent, his Republican opponent said, oh, de Blasio, he's, all for these socialist ideas. He's into this Marxist kind of stuff. Threw all this stuff at him. Instead of his numbers going down, instead of it somehow damaging him, his numbers went up. Now, I'm not saying that people switched over to him because he's accused of these things. That's not the point. But the point is, it doesn't appear to have done any damage. This is a significant turning point, I think, in our discussion about ideology. And just as 20 years ago, the term libertarian was viewed as quite, kind of out there, and people tended to shy away from it, it's become much more acceptable. And many members of Congress even will say that they're of a libertarian bent. I think there is a decent chance that the word socialist, which was once very acceptable in American political life 100 years ago, may be beginning to make a comeback as a acceptable ideological term. If it is, that's a healthy thing, because it means that our discourse, no matter where you stand ideologically, it means our discourse is widening out and we're looking at more options.
If you just tuned in, we're speaking with John Nichols of The Nation magazine, and this is a special Pacifica Radio Archives national broadcast. John, let's talk for a minute about the Pacifica Radio Archives. It's really the history of activists and movements seeking to make America more democratic, more equal, kind of the opposite of what you call dollarocracy in your new book. And the Pacifica Radio Archives go all the way back to 1949. It's our history, and it's a history that is not found anywhere else, and that's why we're asking our listeners today to call us at 800-735-0230 and pledge to keep this incredible resource alive and well. So democracy versus dollarocracy, this is something you've thought about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, communications is central to this discourse. You know, when Bob McChesney and I write about this concept of dollarocracy, what we're suggesting is that increasingly the United States is moving toward a very controlled discourse. And because so much of our traditional mainstream journalism has stood down, newspaper layoffs, cutbacks in radio stations, an alteration of television news so it's more entertainment, less actual news, we've ended up in a situation where the sources of information for people are in many, many locations not so much journalism as campaign ads, as the propaganda, if you will, of political candidates and political parties. This is a very unhealthy circumstance, and it's something that Pacifica recognized at a higher level a long time ago. And back in the 1950s, when you had a lot more journalism and a lot more media, but there were a lot of constraints, again, in that Cold War era, post-World War II era, you had people who stepped up and said, look, we're going to try and have a broader debate here. We're going to try and bring all of the ideas into the mix and really, you know, let people decide for themselves what sort of society they want, not just, you know, sampling from the narrow set of choices that the two major parties give you, not even sampling from the narrow set of choices that a lot of our media gives you. So Pacifica has historically pushed the limits. And that pushing of the limits really tells us a lot about our history, because Pacifica got ahead of the curve. It covered the movements that have made our time. Now, I'll give you a good example. Today, it's nothing radical. It's nothing out of the norm for major media, and frankly for major political players, to talk about LGBT rights, gays and lesbians, bisexuals, transgender people. You know, that rights for these folks, rights for this community is not considered something radical. It's actually very mainstream. But, of course, we well know that 40, 50 years ago, it was very, very different. And some of the first stations in this country, partially because of their location, but also because of the commitment made by Pacifica, covered these movements when nobody else did. When it was actually considered in some major media to be dangerous or unacceptable, Pacifica was out covering. It's the same with elements of the civil rights movement. And it's always been the truth that Pacifica has covered a wider economic debate than most of our major media. Do you know, a lot of our media seems to have just in the last few months discovered the concept of inequality.
Yeah.
This notion that maybe there might actually be some problems when we have income inequality. Pacifica knew that 50 years ago and has covered it all the way through. And so it's in the Pacifica archives that we see, you know, the dawning of movements and also the realization of some of their promise. But we also recognize something else that's very important, John. And that this is, there have always been people who have been right about these things. And they've often been dismissed along the way. It's Pacifica that didn't dismiss them, that respected their wisdom and their insight. And so we ought to respect the immense value of the Pacifica archives.
John Nichols, he says Pacifica has pushed the limits and covered the movements that have changed our history. And that's why we're asking you now to call us at 800-735-0230 and keep this invaluable resource alive and well, the Pacifica Radio Archives. For a $150 pledge, we would like to get about 20 of these in the rest of this hour. $150 pledge. We would love to send you as a thank you gift a 4 gigabyte jump drive with 42 hours of some of those voices John Nichols has been talking about, the voices that helped change our history that were heard for a while only on Pacifica. Ella Baker, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Ossie Davis. Those are all on the 4 gigabyte jump drive that we are offering as a thank you gift for a $150 pledge at 800-735-0230. Pacifica has spoken for democracy and equality, the voices that have changed our history, as John Nichols says, ever since 1949. Once a year, we come to you and ask you to keep this institution alive and well, more important now than it's ever been in the past. 800-735-0230. John Nichols, democracy versus dollarocracy. The media landscape today is pretty grim. We're joined now by Alan Minsky. He's a program director here at KPFK. Alan, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, John and John.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, John.
You got to get the right name to be on this show.
We're all, what a coincidence.
I'll be a John for
what
the hour.
What a coincidence. So, Alan, you know we very well how Pacific has pushed the limits and, as John Nichols has, covered the movements that have changed our history, often being the only media that gave voice to the people who actually turned out to be right about where our country and our world was going. John, we can only keep you for another couple of minutes here, but the alternative is what you've called dollarocracy.
Yeah, and I think it's on the march. I mean, look, we can talk historically about how important Pacifica is, but we also need to recognize the contemporary importance of this network. This network is still trying across this country to give a full range discourse, and supporting the Pacifica Archives and supporting Pacifica is very, very vital in this moment when so much of our discourse is narrow and propagandized. I find the archives to be particularly valuable in this regard because it allows us to look back in history and say, wow, it's amazing that in the 1950s we didn't realize what we should have realized. It's amazing in the 1960s we didn't realize what we should have realized, because obviously there were visionary people going on Pacifica talking about it. We go back to the past, I think, to give ourselves a certain jump start, a certain energy, as we fight in this current moment for a fairer and more just society. And so when you hear Nelson Mandela or Dr. King or Ella Baker or the pioneers of the LGBT rights movement or the pioneers of the disability rights movement or the pioneers of so many other movements, where they got their initial space to express themselves was on Pacifica. And once you listen to that, then I think you come forward to this present moment and you say, okay, Pacifica's gotten it right the whole way through, or all along the way. What are they playing now? What's on now? How do we put this into perspective and recognize what will be considered right and mainstream 20 years from now or 30 years from now? When we make this whole connection through the archives and the current moment, I think it gives us a perspective that allows us to, frankly, I think it strengthens a lot of us to look beyond the frustrating momentary setbacks and struggles of our time and recognize that King was right. This arc of history is long, but it does bend toward justice. And more than, I think, almost any institution in this country, Pacifica has charted that bending of the arc. And that's why I think supporting the archives has tremendous importance, not just as a historical referencing, but frankly as a contemporary benefit and a contemporary strengthening of the struggles we're in.
We go back to the past with the Pacifica Archives to find the pioneers of our fight today for equality and justice. It makes us stronger. John Nichols, you are so eloquent in talking about the importance of the Pacifica Radio Archives. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
It's an honor to be on. I can't imagine a show I'd rather be a part of.
John Nichols. His new book is Dollarocracy. Read him at thenation.com. I'm John Wiener. This is the special Pacifica Radio Archives national broadcast. Coming up later in this hour, Elliot Mintz, the legendary late-night alternative radio host in L.A. in the 1960s and 1970s. But first, I want to chat just for a minute with Alan Minsky about what our featured premium thank you gifts are in this hour of the Pacifica Radio Archives national broadcast. Alan, we have gifts at the $150 level. We are also asking for some people, if you can afford it, to pledge $300. We have a $1,000 pack, and we would love to get a few more people. We've had a few calls today of pledges at the $1,000 level. I think we might get one or two in this hour, too.
800-735-0230, 800-735-0230. Again, Elliot Mintz, that's going to be fantastic, but now's as good a time as any to pick up the phone and call. Let's get about five people to call before we go to that interview. The material is phenomenal. If you are to get the complete collection of From the Vault episodes for a $300 pledge, it is absolutely phenomenal material. Of course, there's Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky, Cornel West, but there's also Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., James Baldwin, the most eloquent voices, artists, musicians, political activists, histories of activist movements and activist issues, all compiled in these marvelous documentary hours, the From the Vault series, and you can get all 342 hours for a $300 pledge when you call 800-735-0230. You're interested in introducing this history to young people that you know. There is no better way to do this than to share these amazing shows with them.
For more than 50 years, Pacifica Radio has pushed the limits and covered the movements that changed our history. Our history is all there in the Pacifica Radio archives. It's not anyplace else. That's why we need you to call now and keep this incredible resource for the present and for the future alive and strong. 800-735-0230. We go back to the past to find the pioneers of our fight today for equality and justice. That makes us stronger. 800-735-0230. Keep our history alive at the Pacifica Radio Archives. $150 pledge. We'd love to send you that 4-gigabyte jump drive with so many of the important voices in our past: Martin Luther King, Ella Baker, Nelson Mandela, Medgar Evers, Ossie Davis, and many more. 800-735-0230 for the $300 pledge. And we know that some of our listeners can afford a $300 pledge. These are tough times for a lot of people, but there are some people who can help us a little more. For that $300 pledge, the 8-gigabyte jump drive is our thank you gift. 342 hours. That means if you listen every day for an hour, it would take almost a year before you had to go back to the beginning to hear Jim Morrison, Noam Chomsky, Maya Angelou, Jimi Hendrix, Allen Ginsberg, Edward Said, Ray Bradbury, Alan Watts. 800-735-0230. Alan Minsky, we're about to go to Elliot Mintz, but let's just remind our listeners one more time what we're doing here today.
Right, indeed, and we want four more calls before we go to the next interview. The number is 800-735-0230. 800-735-0230. Those of you out there in New York City, WBAI is represented spectacularly in these collections, as is KPFA up in Berkeley, and of course KPFK down here. But the contributions from New York City are absolutely phenomenal, whether it's Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King Jr., Allen Ginsberg, Bob Dylan in studio, Leonard Cohen in studio. A long dialogue with Leonard Cohen from 1974. 800-735-0230. We need three more calls, folks. You out there listening right now, pick up the phone and get this amazing collection of your history. There's amazing shows that are about film and Pacifica's coverage of film, including with the legendary KPFA host and New Yorker film critic Pauline Kael. There's an episode about her, John. There's one with about Alfred Hitchcock. So 800-735-0230. Gore Vidal, of course, is is represented in. There's a few shows about Gore Vidal and his amazing eloquence and critique of the American political realities we've lived through these past few decades. 800-735-0230. Call now. Pledge support at the $150, $300 level. By the way, for the $50 level, you can call in. You'll get a voucher for anything from the Pacifica Radio Archives. So 800-735-0230 is the number to call.
I'm John Wiener, and this is the special Pacifica Radio Archives national broadcast. We go back to the past to find the pioneers in our fight today for equality and justice. That makes us stronger. 800-735-0230, the Pacifica Radio Archives. Today is our national fundraiser. We need you to call us. Pacifica has pushed the limits and covered the movements that have changed our history. We're joined now in studio by Mark Torres from the Archives. Mark, it's so great to have you in studio with us today.
I love being a guest on your show, John. I liked how you framed it, though, earlier when you said, if you commute from San Diego, it would take about 3 years before you had to loop back. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-735-0230. We're really in the last few hours of this fund drive. We do it once a year, and it's amazing how responsive the listeners are to help preserve this living treasure. I loved how you framed it, John. It really is something of a collection. 1949 is when we started, and there's nothing like it in the world. Our civil rights recordings, there definitely is nothing like that in the world. And the listeners have been very generous. We've had a flurry of phone calls. Please get back to the phones. Do not forget us in our final few hours. 1-800-735-0230. We've packed an 8-gigabyte jump drive with 432 hours worth of materials, handpicked just for you. So please get to the phones and be as generous as you can.
800-735-0230. Well, our featured guest this hour is Elliot Mintz. He's the legendary late night host on KPFK here in LA in the 60s and 70s. And today he returns to our airwaves to talk about the heroic days of alternative radio. Elliot Mintz was also a best friend of John Lennon and Yoko Ono, especially during Lennon's Lost Weekend here in LA. After 1980, Elliot hosted the weekly syndicated radio series, The Lost Lennon Tapes, weekly for almost 4 years, broadcast all around the world. Elliot Mintz, it's an honor and a pleasure to say welcome back to Pacifica Radio.
John, it's a pleasure to be here, and it's so nice to hear your voice again. I think I spoke to you a couple of years ago on KPFK, and it's just good to be talking with you again.
We also have with us Ellen Minsky, our program director, and Mark Torres from the Pacifica Radio Archives. You may know their voices, too.
Hi, Ellen. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Elliot Mintz.
Well, it's fun listening to your voice, Elliot, in some of our classic recordings from 1969. I know you were one of the hosts of the Pacifica Love-In at Echo. Was it at Echo Park back in the late 1960s?
I think it was Echo Park.
I think we have a picture in one of our old folios of you at that event, so it goes way back.
Was my hair brown?
It was perfect, actually.
Many people around here, Elliot, remember the night during the Iranian hostage crisis when you called the American embassy in Tehran where the hostages were being held. You broadcast that phone call live on the radio right here. Tell us about that night and that show.
I still can remember that. I still can remember that after all these years. What year was that? Was that
79?
Because the hostages were released in 1980, is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
I believe that they were released the same day that President Reagan was inaugurated, am I correct?
Yes, or that would have been, so that would have been January 20th, 81.
So for some reason, I just remembered a split-screen television picture of President Reagan on one side and the hostages being released on the other. I could be off a year or two. But in answer to your question, I was guesting on the Roy of Hollywood program. He is frequently nice enough to invite me back to spin some old tales and open the phones and talk to the listeners. And we had been talking for, a couple of hours about my years at KPFK. and with the usual very nice people who call in and speak. And somebody called up and said, look, you sound like a nice guy. I've never heard of you. I have no idea what you do or what you did on the radio, but I really think this is kind of a waste of air time, that you should be doing something more important. And you know, I scratched my head. I was open to suggestions, and I said to him, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, well, you know, there's some terrorists that are holding American hostages overseas. Why don't you try and speak to them? That would be really doing some kind of service here instead of reminiscing about, you know, smoking banana joints to Mellow Yellow by Donovan. And I looked at Roy and I said to him, you know, I think we should give that a go. And Roy said, let's try it. And, you know, we tried it. And the way we tried it was, of course, you know, the old-fashioned way. I dialed 411. I asked for the overseas operator, then stationed in White Plains, New York, and got an operator. And I said, hi, I'd like to place a call to the American Embassy in Tehran, Iran. Do you have the phone number? And after a very short delay, she said, I have the phone number. And we had to go through some other operator, and, but without much effort, because it was a listed phone number, a phone rang. Somebody picked it up. A voice said, hello. I said, hello. And I was talking to one of the young men who identified himself as a student who was holding the hostages, and so began our interview.
An incredible story. What did he tell you?
I know that the interview was recorded. It's part of the Pacifica Vault, and I know it's available to listeners. I was able to just listen to it recently in the past year or two. And, of course, you know, I identified myself as a radio person in Los Angeles, that we were live on the air, that I had nothing to do with the U.S. government, that it was not an official call. I wanted that, you know, very clear. I did not know the state of mind of the person I was dealing with, and I certainly didn't want to be disruptive. What I really did want to do is two things. One, in an ideal world, I would have liked to have gotten one of the people that was being held to the telephone.
Yes.
Just as a confirmation that they were okay, and I knew the meaningfulness of hearing that voice if you were a family member. So that was the first objective. And the second objective was to try to establish some kind of a rapport with this fellow that may lead to additional phone calls, or you know, me turning the phones over to a professional negotiator in the hopes of some resolution or resolve. I was not going to have a debate with him about the Shah of Iran or the irrational act of kidnap or terrorism, that, and I certainly was not going to be provocative. He sounded to me, I think one of the first questions excuse me, that I asked him was how old he was. And if memory serves, he was 22 years old. And there were some other so-called students or hostage takers or kidnappers, terrorists, whatever you wish to call them. They were all young. He sounded nervous to me. He sounded scared. His command of the language wasn't terribly good, but he was able to hear and respond in some manner. It wasn't as if we learned a great deal about him personally, but he did indicate that he was prepared to die. And he did say at some point that if there was some kind of military assault on the embassy, their first action would be to murder all of the hostages. Mm. It was a chilling moment. And at no time did I excite him. And in fact, as the conversation ended, I do recall asking him if he was afraid. Because obviously if there was going to be military action, the likelihood is that he wouldn't have survived it either. He claimed he was not afraid. And he claimed that he had to do what he had to do unless the Shah of Iran was returned for trial. I asked if we could speak again. That was the last question I asked. And he said, yes. And with that, I looked at Roy, or wrote Roy a little note that he showed to the engineer to cue up the song Stand By Me by John Lennon, and concluded the conversation, gave the KPFK station ID. It was probably 4 o'clock in the morning, and we segued right into that that song. Those are my recollections of that night.
Well, if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Elliot Mintz. He's the legendary late-night host on Pacifica Radio here in L.A. on KPFK. Alternative radio in the glory days, Elliot and Roy of Hollywood calling the embassy in Tehran during the Iranian hostage crisis and speaking to one of the hostage takers, kind of thing you can do on alternative radio that I don't think they're going to do on PBS or or NPR. And that's why we're asking our listeners now to support the Pacifica Radio Archives. It's our history that you're not going to get anywhere else. The number here is 800-735-0230. Elliot, you're best known as the best friend of John and Yoko, especially after John and Yoko separated October 1973 and John Lennon moved out here to L.A., you were there. This was a very tough time for John and Yoko. John was still facing a 90-day deportation order that had been issued by the Nixon administration. He later called it his lost weekend. Would you call this a stressful time for him?
Oh, I think that would be a diplomatic way of putting it. It was more than stressful. I had actually met them in 1971, years before the lost weekend, and remained friends with John until the end, and had dinner with Yoko a few months ago in New York, and still have an association with the John Lennon estate. So the lost weekend comprised just one aspect or element of a friendship that covered the best of times and, you know, traveling around the world with them and being with them for almost every Christmas and Thanksgiving occasion and literally speaking to one or the other almost every day of my life for a number of years. The lost weekend for those folks who were new to the Magical Mystery Tour was a period of time where there was an imbalance in their marriage, and Yoko suggested that John come out to L.A. and experience what bachelorhood was like, because John really was never a bachelor. He got his first wife pregnant, Cynthia. They had a son named Julian Lennon, and back in the day in Liverpool, if you were to impregnate a woman, you did the right thing and you married her, which John did. They were together, and right after the marriage fell apart with Cynthia, he married Yoko. So he really never knew what it was like to be a single guy, and Yoko thought that this could be a good antidote to the imbalance. So he came here, and for the first, I picked him up at the airport, and for the first 2-3 weeks, he did the kinds of things that people who once were called Beatles would do if you're single and running around in Los Angeles, and seemed to have had a relatively good time of it. But that wore off rather quickly, and for the most of the remaining time, his main wish and hope was that she would have him back. And he believed that he should go home to New York. But I told both of them that I'll keep no secrets from either. I spoke with Yoko every day, and I saw him almost every day in L.A., and there were no secrets. And I told Yoko he wanted to come home. She said he wasn't ready yet. And it went on. there were dozens and dozens of the, you know, of the usual adventures. Some of them made headlines. Some of them, to this day, I feel I should keep to myself because I just don't believe in talking out of school. But I can tell you it was a depressing time for him. He was very isolated. John was not very good when it came to having a drink. And he drank to excess in Los Angeles. He also did lengthy recording sessions at night that Phil Spector was producing for an album at the time called the Rock and Roll Sessions, which became rather notorious in Hollywood. One day he asked if I would take him to Las Vegas, and we got on a plane and just went to Las Vegas for a day or two. We went to parties. We did all the, you know, all the conventional stuff. One day he showed up at the house early in the morning. He had been up all night, and little Julian, who couldn't have been more than 10, 11 years old, came out to visit, and he wanted me to meet his son and brought Julian up to the house. I recall that one with clarity. And I recall, you know, some of the parties were appealing to him. I remember being, all of this begins to sound a little too much like name-dropping, but I don't know how you can avoid name-dropping when you're talking about these people. I was with John and Elton John at the house John was staying in, and we received a call from Ringo, and Ringo said that he was at a great party at Dean Martin's house.
Oh, man.
And a party was being hosted by Jeannie Martin. Dean was not there. And his wife was having this party, and the guest of honor was Elizabeth Taylor. And Ringo was rather excited about that and said, why don't you ask Elton and why don't you ask John if they'd like to come up to the party? It was only 10 minutes away from where we were. And I looked at the two of them, and I said, look, do you want to meet Elizabeth Taylor?
Pardon me for laughing. What an invitation.
They thought about it for about a second and a half as they were getting their scarves. And we went to the party. John once told me years ago that we all have it for somebody. We all have it for somebody. Which was one of the reasons he always understood when people approached him for an autograph or to shake his hand or to say thank you for being part of my life in some distant manner. And he said it might be a politician, it might be a writer. For him, at one time in his life, it was Elvis. Just the opportunity to meet him, to hang out. And he said, you know, people tend to think all the time that it's just all about getting to meet John and Yoko, but he wasted no time to shake hands with Elizabeth Taylor.
We're speaking with Elliot Mintz. He's the legendary late-night host and alternative radio, Pacifica Radio, KPFK, here in Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s. Elliot, before I let you go, I just want to talk for a minute about the difference between alternative radio and what goes on in the mainstream media today with its obsession with celebrities and the political horse race. You were able to do things here on Pacifica that that we don't hear anywhere in the mainstream media today, I don't think.
We can underscore that. After I left KPFK, which was the first radio station I ever worked at, I began there at, I use the word work, it was more of a privilege. I think I began when I was 21 years old, and I was at the station for 2-3 years, and went on to do shows on 5 or 6 other radio stations and then become the Hollywood correspondent for Eyewitness News and blah, 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 blah. When I got tired of broadcasting, I became a media consultant about 30 years ago, which is kind of like a publicist, representing, dozens of clients because I knew about the needs and demands of media, and I had interviewed almost 2,000 people, so I knew what their needs were, combined the two, and morphed it into the new relationship. In that capacity, I've had to take public figures to radio and television stations. I've had to call and pitch radio and television stations on behalf of clients, some popular, some not, some infamous, some anonymous. And I can tell you that the reception of conventional mainstream media in America has become like an old boys club. It's like a little club in London where they decide who gets in and who doesn't. And when they make a determination that you can do a show, virtually everything that you see on television today by way of talk shows, the guests and the host have already planned what they're going to say. There's nothing spontaneous that occurs. It's all prepared on 3x5 index cards. The hosts have not read the book, have not seen the movie. The guests are not overjoyed to be there. And basically it is turned into just a simple, crass vehicle for the sale of objects, most of which we don't need or want. It has deteriorated now to a level where more and more people are abandoning conventional television and conventional radio. Sadly, they're, for the most part, going to the Internet, as opposed to a place like Pacifica, which was different then, and I still listen, of course, and is still an outpost of communication. It still remains this this blinking beacon that if you're floating somewhere and really seeking information and really wanting to learn and to be entertained simultaneously, where you know you might hear the unexpected, whether you like it or if you don't like it, it's there and it's available and it keeps you sane. It is simply different than any other media outlet in America, possibly the world. It is freer than the BBC. It is essential. It's essential that all the Pacifica stations stay on the air. And I know that the only way that it can stay on the air is for rent to be paid and transmitters to be operated and for the minimal staff that it takes to operate it, for them to receive something as well. So I remain a supporter of Pacifica emotionally, intellectually, financially, and whereas I never tell people what to do, it's not my style. I know that you're going through a fundraising period now, and I know you're also going through difficult times now, more so than in the past. And I just want to advise people who could be listening how different everything would be if you didn't have the opportunity to occasionally check in on these airwaves and hear something new or old that has the power to alter your life. You would miss it very, very, very much if it's gone. So whatever you can afford, in any manner that you can afford it, for whatever it's worth, please join these good people and keep Pacifica breathing freely.
Elliot Mintz, he's the legendary late-night host on Pacifica here at KPFK. One of my heroes, Elliot, thanks so much for talking with us today.
A pleasure, John. Nice talking to all of you.
Thank you, Elliot.
800-735-0230. I'm John Wiener. I'm in studio here at KPFK with Mark Torres and Alan Minsky. We've got about 8 minutes to reach our goal this hour of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
With 20 people, we can reach our goal, ladies and gentlemen. Please get to the phones. We need 20 people. That was absolutely riveting hearing from Elliot Mintz, to tell you the truth. And I think if he returned to the airwaves with a evening show, I don't think he could ever fully exhaust the stories that he has. 1-800-735-0230. Please get to the phones right now. And for a $300 pledge, we are giving away an 8 gigabyte jump drive. stuffed with the programs that Elliot was espousing, some of the great names from Pacifica. And you get two of these jump drives. They arrive by the holiday season to give away as gifts or to keep for your own collection.
And indeed, you can hear Elliot Minns on the 70th birthday celebration for John
That's
Lennon
right.
in dialogue with myself from a couple years ago, a marvelous conversation. And again, in that conversation, he lapses into what he was saying about Pacifica and the essential power of Pacifica Radio and the need to keep it vital. 800-735-0230. That's right. Pledge at the 50, 150, 300 or up level. 800-735-0230. The amazing $300 level thank you gift is all the episodes of From the Vault.
Actually, John was saying earlier, he's like, is there a $1,000 level? Yes, there's an Archivist Circle level. And I think there is one listener out there that would love to give us a ring, 1-800-735-0230. This has 2 8-gigabyte jump drives, a 16-gigabyte jump drive, and several disc sets totaling over 800 hours of materials from the Pacifica Radio Archives. I know there's one person out there with $1,000 that can give us a ring right now. 1-800-735-0230 is the number, and we only have a few minutes left. We have 6 people on the line, and we need 14 more in 6 minutes. Please get to the phone now.
Pacifica Radio, we've been speaking with Elliot Minns, the legendary late-night host here in L.A. He said, Pacifica Radio, it was different then. It's different now. He called it an outpost, a blinking beacon in our fight today for equality and justice. 800-735-0230. The $150 pledge level, the $300 pledge level, and we're hoping to get $1,000 pledge. In the next 5 minutes at 800-735-0230. Pacifica has pushed the limits, covered the movements that have changed our history. That history is available nowhere else, and that's why we need you now to call us at 800-735-0230.
Right, indeed. And this material also is so relevant and vital through today. We talked about the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, but also the anti-Iraq War movements are represented here. A brilliant talk by Gore Vidal on the streets of Hollywood Boulevard on February 15th, 2003. We have the environmental movement ever more relevant with each passing day that people understand. And again, as Elliot said, as John Nichols said, Pacifica Radio is out in front of everyone else on the current environmental movement. Look where Amy Goodman is this week. Who else is covering from Warsaw?
We have Rachel Carson from 1962. They didn't even allow women at the National Press Club. She had to address the nation at the Women's National Press Club. Pacifica dragged our reel-to-reel machines in. This was before the time of digital recording or even cassettes. We were dragging in large reel-to-reel machines to these locations to go out and record this history. And you can help digitize the next batch of recordings by getting to the phones right now. 1-800-735-0230. We need 10 more calls, Alan.
We're halfway to where we started, and this last mini pitch, we gave so much content this hour, the amazing Elliot Minns. I was mesmerized talking to him on the eve of John Lennon's 70th birthday, and again today, great dialogue with John Nichols earlier, all of what you get from Pacifica Radio, and get the history of Pacifica Radio on this amazing 342-hour collection of From the Vault episodes.
Eight callers to go to reach our goal.
800-735-0230.
We go back to the past at the Pacifica Radio Archives to find the pioneers of our fight today for equality and justice. It makes us stronger. 800-735-0230. 800-735-0230. Keep the Pacifica Radio Archives alive and strong for another year.
Actually, in the Pacifica Radio Archives are the original recordings of John Wiener's legendary documentary on John Lennon. We received those cassettes, interviews with amazing people. John, who were on those interviews?
We have Bobby Seale, Allen Ginsberg, Jerry Rubin,
Abby Hoffman.
Abby Hoffman. You don't hear these voices on NPR or PBS or MSNBC. You do hear them in the Pacifica Radio Archives, 800-735-0230. We've only got a minute and a half left in this hour. We need you to call to make our goal this hour of $10,000, 800-735-0230. Please call us now.
And again, Joni Mitchell, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, Leonard Cohen, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Jimmy Cliff, John Lennon, Phil Oakes, Jackson Browne, Graham Nash, they're all in this collection, folks. 800-735-0230 is the number to call. 800-735-0230. We only have a few seconds left here. We still need a few of you to call to make our goal for the hour. Pledge at any level you can, folks. 50, 150, 300 for the entire From the Vault collection.
I want to thank Mark Torres. I want to thank Alan Minsky. I want to thank John Nichols and Elliot Mintz. They were our guests this hour of the Pacifica National Radio broadcast to support the Pacifica Radio Archives. I'm John Wiener. Thanks for listening. The Pacifica Radio Archives National broadcast continues on this station.
You are listening to the Pacifica Radio Archives' 12th Annual Holiday Fun Drive broadcast, preserving a living history on all five Pacifica radio stations. 99.5 FM WBAI New York, 89.3 FM WPFW Washington DC, 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 94.1 FM and 89.3 FM KPFA KPFB Berkeley. 88.1 FM KFCF Fresno, 90.7 FM KPFK Los Angeles, also heard on 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 99.5 FM China Lake, 93.7 FM North San Diego.
Hello, yes, this is Brother Cornell West, and I am here to do all that I can to support my dear brothers and sisters at Pacifica. Students, faculty, teachers need to get in on this magnificent project and program. I'm doing all that I can. I'm behind it 120%. It is what we need in these times.
Call 1-800-735-0230. Our volunteers can help you select your gift. You'll receive two copies of your gift, one for you and one for a school or friend, and you'll get them no later than December 24th. Support us with a $150 pledge and receive Season 8 of From the Vault, 42 hours featuring Nelson Mandela, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Andy Warhol, legendary activist Ella Baker, Irish poet Seamus Heaney, and more. You can pledge at the $300 level and receive the entire From the Vault series, 342 hours marking 8 years of the weekly public radio series. Call 1-800-735-0230 or visit PacificaRadioArchives.org. Stay tuned.
You're tuned to Pacifica's 12th annual two-day Pacifica Radio Archives Holiday Fun Drive National Simulcast, Preserving a Living History. Your donations today are critical. They support and match grant-funded projects. This year from the Grammy Foundation and the National Historical Publications and Records Commission at the National Archives. You can help make it happen by calling 1-800-735-0230 or visit online at PacificaRadioArchives.org. Stay tuned for the next hour in this Pacifica Network special national broadcast.
And welcome back to the 12th Annual Pacifica Radio Archives National Broadcast and Fundraiser. My name is Mark Torres. This hour is dedicated to the hard work of Truth Dig, which you can find on the web and is hosted by both Bob Shear. We've got Peter Shear and we've got Josh Shear here. It's Shear Madness.
How's
today.
It going?
Welcome to the national audience, everybody.
Great. Great to be helping the archive, which is fabulous. Use it all the time.
Yeah. Now, when Bob came in, he immediately asked me, okay, I need this Ferlinghetti from 1955 to 1961. I need the Gore Vidal from 2005. He gave me a laundry list. Every time I see him, laundry list.
Well, that's because I lost that the memory stick you saw me last time.
Oh, no. Okay. Well,
do you still offer that? That was a good one, the memory stick that you could give to a school.
And that's right. Yeah, we are still doing that.
Oh, well,
And people can call right now as we get warmed up here at 1-800-735-0230. We have a 4-gig jump drive with 48 hours of material for a $150 gift. And then we also have a $300 for a $300 donation, an 8-gig drive with 342 hours of materials from the Pacifica Radio Archives. And that you can get every time you pledge, we send 2 gifts to you, one for yourself and one to give away as a gift to perhaps a school, library, or university of your choice. Like many people have done in the past, or you can give it away as a gift. We promise to get it to you before the holidays. 1-800-735-0230. We'd also like to welcome Interim Program Director of KPFK, Alan Minsky. How you doing, Alan?
Great, Mark. And again, we are so unbelievable.
The always interim.
Always interim, yes, the permanent interim. I have it tattooed on me now. So the archives is upstairs from KPFK Radio, and it is, first of all, it's truly inspiring to work at Pacifica Radio and to know that the best work that we do in the time that I'm here is going to be at the archives. In fact, in recent Pacifica fund drives, I have encouraged people around the network to feature the material from the past decade because, hey, I was thinking, we've done some incredible things this past decade. Well, the Pacifica Radio Archives collects the past decade and the previous 5 decades of Pacifica Radio and is the most incredible treasure trove and resource of American history in the second half of the 20th century in audio form, I believe, anywhere in the world. And, of course, it is skewed towards movements for social justice, people who are trying to sort of look around the corners and really seek out the truth, whether it's philosophical investigations, whether it's literary form, or whether it is politics and social movements. It's an amazing, and music, of course, incredible treasure trove of music. So what they have featured in all of this material that people can pick up are the amazing shows that have been put together by the archives team, going back to Christopher Sprinkle a few years ago, Mark Torres these days, and it is called From the Vault. It is a show that frames this incredible wealth of material into coherent, brilliant radio documentary form. So the incredible, eclectic mix of treasure that is at the Pacifica Radio Archives is represented in all of these collections. And the $300 pledge level is phenomenal, phenomenal. The $150 pledge level, one phenomenal at least there, too. It is just astonishing stuff. And the material is incredible. And it's great thing to do to contribute it to an educational institution.
Well, I want to get to our first clip. This is Dr. Martin Luther King from 1968. He was putting into context the fact that we had been involved in the Vietnam War for almost 10 years at that point, which feels not too unlike what we're involved with here in both the Middle East and Afghanistan, where it seems like we have a perpetual war going on. Bob, do you get the feeling that there are some similarities with the sapping of resources to both of these war efforts?
The great thing about having this archive for me, and I have given out that thumb drive, to schools and so forth, and I'm sure I'll do it again before this hour is up, when the gifts flag. But that particular speech, is that the speech at Riverside Church?
This one is at, it is, as a matter
That's
of fact,
right.
Yes.
That is an incredible piece of American history, because that's when Martin Luther King, over the advice of some important people in the civil rights movement, certainly of politicians, decided to broaden the focus of the civil rights movement and to come out against the war in Vietnam. And he took a tremendous amount of heat for it. The New York Times editorially condemned him for giving that speech. I happened to be the editor of Ramparts at that time. I knew King. He gave us that speech. We ran it in Ramparts. The New York Times didn't run it.
Wow.
The very fact that you have those words and that Martin Luther King, and what he said was, he raised the question, how can I preach nonviolence to kids in the ghetto when my own government is the major purveyor of violence in the world today? That was his phrase. Now, they forget that speech when we honor Martin Luther King.
That's
we
right.
Turned him into a statue. But the Martin Luther King that one could recall from that period very much is the king of that speech. You have that speech.
Yes, we do. And we're going to play a clip from it right now. And as you're listening to the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., please get to the phones, 1-800-735-0230. And we'll be back with more from the people of Truth Dig.
President Johnson raised a question some weeks ago when he was giving his State of the Union address. He talked of all of the beautiful television sets that we have over the nation. In fact, he gave the number, about 70 or 80 million. He talked about the beautiful automobiles and the massive expressways that will hold our automobiles up and keep them flowing. He talked about the number of automobiles, new automobiles that come out every year. And he said after that, yet that is questioning in the land. That is a strange restlessness. And I guess he raised the question because he didn't quite know what was wrong. Well, there is something radically wrong. And I suspect it is that in all too many instances, we have allowed the means by which we live